You are listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and ExcellentCultures.com. My name is Zach Gandra, your host, and with me, as always, is the irrefutable heavyweight champ, Steve Gandra.
And, you know, you need to go light on that today. You need to go light on that heavyweight stuff.
I was
sensitive about my weight.
I was just going to say irrefutable heavy.
Well, you usually say inimitable. But you know, I'm kind of sensitive about my weight.
If I could say bitched and moaned on the air, I don't think I can. But last
you just did say that.
But last time we had a show, you got all up in arms about needing a new word instead of inimitable.
That's better than inimitable.
So irrefutable heavyweight lover, Steve G.
That's good.
Is
heavyweight lover?
Heavyweight
Isn't that
lover.
A song from the 70s?
Or the overweight the lover, heavy D,
or 80s or something?
That was the 80s. Yeah, it's a great movie. Great movie.
Good
great,
golly.
Great. Large and in charge.
We need to change
group.
The subject fast.
All right. Well, either way, welcome to the show. We hope you're listening in rainy Seattle or sunny wherever else you are, because the sun has gone in Seattle, and we had a irrefutable traffic jam getting here today.
Oh, traffic jams, accidents, and rain is back in Seattle.
It was bad. But we had a lot of time to mentally prepare today for our guests.
Well, we have a great guest.
Yeah, we do have a great guest. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, Michelle Livingston is Senior Vice President at Umpqua Bank. We'll get her to tell you what Umpqua means.
Yeah, I was going to ask. That was going to be one of my
top
questions.
But, I mean, these guys are taking over the whole Northwest region.
Umpqua.
I mean, they're all over the place and have a phenomenal culture.
Mm-hmm.
Her boss, the CEO, has a couple of books out on culture that we're going to tell you about later. We'll get Michelle to tell you about. But great guest today. And, you know, I got really excited just listening to her talk and experiencing her vision and her enthusiasm when we met before the show. So
we'll play the clap track and welcome our guest.
Yeah.
Hello,
yeah.
Michelle.
Hi,
Livingston.
Michelle.
Yeah, clap track.
We need to really get a clap track.
Yeah, we're glad you're here, Michelle.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what does Umpqua mean?
Umpqua means raging.
Umpqua.
Yes, Umpqua means raging waters.
Nice.
Yes,
I always thought it was Umpqua.
Well,
that sounds like a good promotion.
When you have our coffee or something.
Yeah, exactly. Raging water coffee. Umpqua.
Yes. Well, it comes from there's an Umpqua Indian tribe in southern Oregon and
awesome.
The Roseburg area where we began and have our roots, and that is what it means. So we feel it appropriately reflects who we are. In the sense that we're always moving and, you know, we're challenged, we're going over hurdles and forging new paths. So I think it's apropos, if you will.
Awesome.
Well, we've been trying to get Michelle on the show for a while since we heard about the great culture at Umpqua and finally had the opportunity to connect. So, Michelle, tell us about the work you do at Umpqua. Your role and, you know, and about the company.
Sure, happy to, Steve. So I'm the Director of Lending and Small Business Solutions for the bank, and what that means is I support all our stores. We don't call them branches. We call them stores.
About how many stores now, Michelle?
We have over 350 in
350.
Five states.
Well, that's a lot. In five states, 350
yes.
stores.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep, all on the west here. California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Nevada. So
West Coast, the best coast.
Exactly, exactly. And so I support all our locations in helping consumers and businesses with credit needs and business services and so forth. So it's been an exciting adventure, interesting for sure through the last few years of the economic cycle. I've been in this role just about 5 months now. We had an acquisition, a merger with Sterling Bank, which just about doubled our size to $22 billion in assets.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So lots going on here at Umpqua as far as getting the two organizations pulled together. And prior to that, I oversaw all our store locations in Puget Sound and Portland markets. So been in the business almost 30 years, hate to admit that.
You don't look that old. You don't
thank you.
Folks,
if
you're listening
wonderful.
To us on the podcast, be sure and look at her photo because she does not look old enough to have been a banker.
I'm looking at Michelle's bio, and it says that she, UW graduate, a bachelor's in criminal justice, but ended up in banking.
Yeah, go figure. How does that happen? Well, I think I was pretty lucky getting started in the business. Actually, didn't have any plans to stay in banking. Was doing a teller position at a bank during college to, you know, pay for my schooling. Mm. And once I graduated from the UW, I was going to go to law school. But I was making pretty good money at the bank. I know that's surprising for bankers to say, but when you're young and you're, you know, 20-ish, you're making money and you're on your own, you're like, wow, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
And I got some promotions pretty quickly and ended up just really feeling challenged. Something about banking is that it's always changing. It never stays the same. Everything moves really fast, so you can't be bored.
So you started out as – so this is the teller to senior vice president story.
It is.
What a great book title.
I don't know. I think it needs a little bit more excitement.
Okay, so here's one of the posing questions that doesn't get answered enough, at least to the consumers, customers, the you know, the people that you want to reach, is what is the big difference between a credit union and a bank?
That's a really good question. The main difference is that a credit union is a nonprofit and they work under a different charter than banks do. So they don't have shareholders that they're dispersing their earnings or their profits to at the end of the year. So they basically have to spend most of the money that they're earning on, you know, marketing, advertising, or whatever, product development, et cetera. Banks are owned by shareholders. For instance, we're a public company, publicly held company. So we have shareholders that, you know, own stock in the company. And we have a responsibility to our associates, to our communities, and to our shareholders.
So a higher level of accountability, it sounds like.
I would say so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, plus you have to pay taxes and credit unions don't,
yes.
Right?
Oh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
So that makes a difference, of course, in probably how we choose to spend our money and where we place our investments.
Well, but anyone who has ever been around business before knows what it's like to have to please shareholders compared to customers. And in your case, you have to please both. Which is a interesting, you know, dichotomy. But before we go there, I want you, Michelle, take a little bit more time and tell us about the difference. You know, what makes Umpqua so different from a people and culture perspective, in your opinion?
I think it's our vision, really, and what our expectations are of who we are and what we want to be to our communities and our associates and our customers. So what I mean by that is we have a vision that we don't want to be like any other bank. We want to be totally different. We want to make banking fun. We don't want it to be a chore. We want to be a part of our communities in ways that, you know, other banks maybe are not. And the culture that has been built here in the last 20 years in particular with Ray Davis, our CEO, is one of people first and results second.
Yeah.
And when you lead with people first, amazing things can happen.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to their hearts and minds and you get people excited around a vision and anything can happen, sometimes beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I noticed right away when we first met, we were talking about the, you know, how different Umpqua Bank, you know, really is from, you know, any other banks and even other for-profit companies or even other nonprofits is, you know, everybody talks, we're committed to our community and we volunteer. But what I saw was you guys do it. I mean, and I even tried to get a hold of you by email, and your email said you're out doing community service. And I know that the numbers you gave me, your folks do like double what other people do just in volunteer hours to the community, and it's something they do because they want to and they love to do it, is what it felt like.
Exactly. We have one of the benefits our company provides to every associate, our Connect Volunteer network, and we each get 40 hours a year to volunteer in our communities in organizations that we feel strongly about and care about in our neighborhoods. And the hours have to be spent during the work week, during your normal work week, because that's when a lot of organizations need help and have a hard time finding help because people are working. And we have, for instance, in 2013, 82% of our associates volunteered, and
wow,
we put in 43,000 hours
wow,
of community
that's awesome.
Service.
Wow. That's
yeah.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And when I first came to Umpqua and I heard about the Connect, you know, benefit and opportunity to volunteer when I was interviewing, I thought to myself, well, that's pretty neat. I'll be interested to see if that is supported and people are excited and are using and engaging in that opportunity, or if it's one of those things where it's talked about, but, you know, when you actually go to volunteer, it's your boss says, oh, we can't afford you to go right now, or, you know, it's frowned upon that you went. And I, after my first volunteer opportunity here at the company, I told my boss, oh, I'm going to be out volunteering in the community, you know, this afternoon. He said, he was so excited for me. He said, what are you doing? Where are you going? And then when I came back the next day, he said, how was it? And so I got that positive reinforcement that my leadership, my executive, really cares about this program, and they mean what they say.
So people living it rather than just talking about it.
Exactly. And my bosses, they're out volunteering in the community too. So we get to talk about how we're supporting our communities, you know, if we're on boards of nonprofits or whatnot, what's going on, share ideas. So it's pretty exciting.
We got to go into our first break, but if you're listening right now, and you're just thinking, oh, this is a giant Umpqua commercial. It's not. It's going to be an awesome conversation to hear how they do leadership and culture in the Umpqua culture. I'm needing a thesaurus today in my work. And Steve's looking at me. But we got to go to a break. So we're breaking for a break. And you need to come back right back with Michelle Livingston from Umpqua Bank. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategies for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
back, everybody. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We have a special guest with us today, Michelle Livingston from Umpqua Bank, all over the West Coast. You'll see Umpqua Banks all over the place, providing a new, exciting, and different experience for customers all the way around. And I'm not a customer of Umpqua Bank. However, one did just go into my neighborhood, and I was walking past, and I saw the sign, and it said Umpqua Bank and whatever the sign says. But then it was all glass walls all the way around it, and I looked in, and I was like, that doesn't look like a bank. Like, number one, there's people smiling. Number two, it's like really nice. It looked like something very inviting, something I wanted to go to and have a party in. It was awesome. Is that normal, Michelle?
It is normal, and we do have parties in our store. Come in and join one time.
Yeah, now we found what we were really looking to hear.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't look like a bank. I had a hard time believing that it was a bank. It didn't look like a bank.
Exactly. It's supposed to be an extension of the neighborhood and a space where folks can come hang out, have a cup of coffee. You know, maybe you have a meeting, you meet someone there and you have a brief meeting, or you meet and head somewhere to lunch. We're trying to make an experience there that is pleasant, fun, gathering place, a place where the community can find out what's going on in their neighborhood, get connected, hang out, read the paper, surf the internet. We've got, I don't know if you noticed when you peeked in that store, but there's what we call the iCafes. So there's internet, computers, laptops there for folks to sit down and check their email or catch up on news, have a cup of coffee.
So it's not to just give us your money and then get out of here so we can do what we really want to do.
Nope, not that at all. We want you to stay around a while, you know, have a conversation with us or have a conversation with a neighbor, you know, a community member, you know, just enjoy the paper and get a few minutes out of your office if you need a break. It's a great place to just relax and find out, hey, what's going on around here?
I'm dropping in for coffee and free Wi-Fi. That's what's happening.
And Friday cookie day, too, don't forget.
Oh, cookie day. Now we know where we're going on Friday.
Yeah. It's supposed to be low carb right now.
Yeah. So, we got to have cheese sticks on Friday.
We'll put some carrot sticks out there.
That's good. Carrot sticks are good. So, Michelle, one of the things that has really impressed me about just studying about Umpqua and just hearing your enthusiasm when you talk about people first. You know, a lot of people talk people first, and most of those guys are either just talking and not walking their talk, or they're nonprofits who are in the full-out people service business. But you guys are a for-profit, publicly held firm. You have accountability to shareholders. You have accountability to the government. You have accountability to Wall Street. You have accountability to your communities. How in the world can you make something that sounds as warm and fuzzy and non-financial service profit-oriented like we really live people first be successful in a business?
Well, I think it starts with our leader, Ray Davis. I mean, that is his philosophy, and that is the belief system that he created when he came here in 1994. And that was this environment of we want to be the world's greatest bank. Now, that's an aspiration, and it is not. It's something we strive to achieve every day. So that vision, how do you do that? You have to do that by inspiring and empowering people. You're not going to do it by saying you've got to do, you know, 15 checking accounts tomorrow or else you're not going to have a job. You know, that kind of leadership doesn't really get people excited and inspired and motivated. So Ray is very much a people person, and he has hired his executive management team as such too. And we all support we're all striving for that every day. How do we do that? And he leads by example, and I'll give you an example. We were doing an acquisition up here in the Puget Sound a few years ago in the tough times. FDIC had a couple of banks that weren't going to make it, and we stepped in and purchased a couple of the banks from the FDIC. And Ray did his check-in with his executives around, you know, the Friday night closure of that bank, and we were going to step in and take over, you know, Saturday morning and Friday night, come in and introduce ourselves. And when he got his executives around, he did not want to know if everybody was ready for Friday night. He wanted to know what everybody was going to do to take care of the staff tonight and tomorrow morning when we first meet them.
Wow, that's awesome.
Wow.
And that is, to me, it's powerful. It's leading by example, and it's showing, you know, everybody, this is what leading with the people first means.
Well, it's obviously working because you don't double in size through acquisition as fast as you have if the philosophy was not producing performance and profits in a way that a publicly held for-profit company has to function just to stay in business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's people actually care about people. They have a voice. They have input. And we listen to the feedback and we make adjustments. I think that in approaching it from inspiring and motivating people and giving people the benefit of the doubt. People come to work and they want to do a great job. And we as executives, we want to make sure that we're transparent enough that the field, you know, our associates know what's happening. And they feel comfortable with the direction, and they're getting the answers.
So, Michelle, tell us, first, before we go there, tell us a little bit more. I understand Ray's written a couple of books. Is that right? What are the titles, and how do we, you know, how do our guests access them? Can you get them on Amazon? Where do we get the books?
Yes, you can get them on Amazon. The first one Ray wrote is called Leading for Growth, and he wrote this with Alan Schrader, and this was published in 2007. It is available on Amazon. And then he recently, just last year, actually beginning of this year, just published his latest book called Leading Through Uncertainty. And he wrote this with Peter Economy. And this is also available on Amazon. And the interesting thing, lots of similar stories and approaches. I mean, you'll definitely understand Umpqua by reading either one of these books or both of them.
Well, it sounds like we don't want to just understand Umpqua. We want to copy you. And that's happening too.
I understand out there.
Yeah, we want to copy
not
you.
Not at my bank.
But as long as we're not a financial service organization in your neighborhood, then, you know, that's good for everybody.
I can't even
pay my rent online anymore at my bank. I'm 15 years and leaving. So yeah. Maybe I'm going to be an Umpqua.
Well, you will definitely talk after this.
Okay.
We'll take care of you.
So, Michelle, tell us what's your vision for a culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement? What's the Umpqua way of making that happen?
So, as I stated, you know, I think it starts at the top. Every leader supports and believes that this people first and this culture of empowerment, empowering associates, giving them the tools so they can make the decisions for customers right there. We want to make the experience for customers just out of this world, something they've never experienced, surprise and delight, unexpected in a great way. We often hear, I've never heard of a bank doing that before. Those are the kinds of feelings that we want our communities and customers to have, but it also endears the associates to the organization because they're feeling connected, they're feeling like they make a difference, and it feels good. So, but it does start at the top in leading by example, being transparent. If we make a mistake, we admit it, and we fix it, and we do better next time. I mean, we've made mistakes, and we've stood up there and said, we blew this. We're sorry we blew this. Here's how we fixed it, and next time we're ready so we don't make that mistake
so
again.
So no political shenanigans in order to avoid accountability for mistakes?
None. We just we own it, and when we win together, we win together. And if we fall, we pick each other up, and we move on. But it's I can't tell you how many times we've stood. Ray has, I have. If we've made a mistake, we say, we blew it on this one, guys, and we're sorry. And this is what happened, and this is how we're fixing it.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. So tell us a little bit about, I know you've been around the business world for a few years, and you grew up in this bank, obviously, from a teller to a senior VP. Where have you seen some of the challenges that get in the way? I mean, what slows down this vibrant, excited, we want to surprise and delight, you know, culture? What are some of the trouble signs that our listeners should watch for that you guys have seen that can help them stay on track rather than sliding backwards into what isn't necessarily a great culture?
I think when you stop getting feedback from your associates, if they stop sharing ideas or they stop giving you feedback of ways to do things better, you know you've probably lost them. Now, first of all, you have to set up an organization and a culture where feedback is important. It's received, it's listened to, and action is taken. And so if you're doing those things and then you see people, you know, retreat from that and they stop sharing, they kind of go into their shells, you know you're losing them. Our associates are very vocal. We have lots of ways for them to give feedback, which really helps. And we do, their feedback is heard, and they see action taken on their feedback. And if it's not going to be taken, they understand why. Hey, we scoped it out, and this is why we're not going to pursue it now. But I think that's important. Also making sure that they can have an impact. They understand where they're making an impact and how their performance makes a difference. I think they need to know, I'm special and I'm making a difference here. So recognition, rewards, you know, find out what is special to them. Some people don't want to be praised in public. Some people do. But being able to help, keep people engaged by recognizing and rewarding their activities and helping them see what a difference they're making every day. And not just inside in the organization, but the difference they're making in their community. I mean, we together have served 43,000 hours in our communities, and this is how much time we've spent. We make that public right on our intranet and our insider, so every day when we log on, we see how many hours we've given back to our communities. That's pretty motivating for an associate to see the impact they're having.
Yeah.
Not only that, it's on your homepage. Like, wherever you are, just popped up on your guys' website right now, and we happen to be near the Tacoma Puyallup area when we record this, and it says over 18,000 hours already this year, right here in this neighborhood, this region. We got to go to a break again. Obviously, everything Michelle's been sharing, you're going to want to tune back into. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy, to-do list, done, supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better, that politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategy for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500 or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome because they get it. What they know for sure, you don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate, bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, That's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back with Biz Culture Matters and ExcellentCultures.com. We're interviewing Senior Vice President of Umpqua Bank, Michelle Livingston, today, and she's telling us about how she and her team of leaders at Umpqua Bank, now 350 stores, they're not called branches, they're called stores, wide and growing like crazy, have really made a difference by putting people first. And I want to underscore that this is a for-profit, publicly held company and are growing like crazy with a people-first philosophy. If you missed the first part of the show, you want to make sure you go back and listen to it on the podcast, because Michelle actually told us what Umpqua means, and it's nothing that's even anything like what their culture is. So you definitely want to hear that.
Was it Raging Waters?
Yeah, oh, there you go. So now they don't have to go back and listen to the
beginning. Oh, yeah. Well, they're going to want to go back. Is it Raging Waters, Michelle? Did I get it right?
It is.
All right. Raging Waters. So before the break.
So refreshing.
Yeah, before the break, Michelle was telling us about the danger signs of you know, what can derail a great culture. And I'm reminded just by listening to her feedback of what we heard from Jack Hollis, when, you know, he was the VP of the Scion division of Toyota, that just a few years ago won on the, you know, worldwide Toyota all employee satisfaction survey. You know, the top of all Toyota was this phenomena of when people start delaying sharing their opinions or withholding their feedback, then you know that there's a trouble sign. So, Michelle, tell us a little bit about how do you as a leader, how do you turn that around if it starts to happen?
So a few things we do regularly, and we do focus groups with small groups of associates, so we can just keep a pulse on what's going on. What are the things getting in their way of serving their customers in the best way possible? Maybe what bureaucratic little things might be they tripping over, or something they've been trying to get fixed that they haven't been able to. So we do focus groups regularly. And what's really interesting too about our focus groups is all levels of management do focus groups. Ray, our CEO, does them. Our executive leadership do them. I do them. And we do them cross department as well. We don't always, for instance, I sometimes will do it with a mixed group of associates from different departments, not always just my own, which is nice because you can hear what's going on and you might have a different perspective as well for them. We also do culture conversations similar to a focus group, but we get together and we talk about culture and what's important to us and why working here and some of the things we get to do, you know, are special. And if they're not going the way we want them to, how do we make them better? What can we do to make it better? And those are really interesting because you can kind of get a pulse on how everybody's feeling.
Yeah, that's amazing. So another question I have for you is, so many people read books about, you know, leadership and improving their culture and improving performance, and they hear the tactics, like, let's have these, oh, what a great idea, let's do these focus groups. Let's have focus groups on culture and get everybody together and talk about them. But what so many don't realize is those type of practices and processes only work if the leaders who are involved in them really care. You know, if you haven't had a leader that really believed that it's all about the money and we don't care about people, you could force them to sit in that focus group because it was a company policy, but somehow the feedback just doesn't come out. So how do you, especially as fast as you guys are growing and, you know, in an acquisition environment where you're buying up, as you shared with us early on the show, you're buying failing, you know, financial institutions in many cases that didn't do it right, that had poor management or poor practices and not a great culture. How do you, you know, what do you do in order to change the heart of leaders from, you know, let's say you acquire a bank and a bunch of stores where the leaders believe that it's all about the money and they really don't care about people, and now they're doing your focus groups. How do you touch those leaders and help them turn it around, or do you just replace everybody?
Well, I would say those leaders don't tend to make it here. They
just can't survive.
I mean, they self-select out, or, you know, when you're bringing banks together, you don't want duplicate of everything. I mean, there are some efficiencies you're trying to gain. So generally speaking, some of the main leaders, you know, aren't retained for a variety of reasons. But the associates who are here, they care. They want to do a great job, and they want to understand the organization they've been in. And so you have to get some, this is little stuff every day. It's not, there's not one big answer. So some of the things I did was just little things. I'd get some feedback. I'd take quick action and make it better. So they saw instant results. Something got fixed instantly. They'd send me an email. They would get a reply rather quickly. I would return their phone calls rather quickly. So I quickly, small little things make a big difference when you're trying to win the hearts and minds of people. It's the little stuff. It's not standing up and having one big inspirational speech once a year and then everybody never hears from you again. Or if they do try to reach out to you, you don't respond. So it's the small stuff every day that makes a difference and builds the trust of people, and being there, visiting them face-to-face, lots of face-to-face, you know, meetings, or even just stop-by visits in their store. But being able to get some quick fixes for them shows them their feedback's important, and you want to make it better for them, and we're in it together.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that the types of leaders who believe in money first and, you know, people are just something we use to get money, don't make it in your culture, and how they self-select out. What's really interesting is listening to you talk about, you know, these little things, you know, something as simple as responsiveness. And when people see that, gosh, not only do you listen, but you take quick action on the feedback that you give. I mean, those little things are huge in building a culture. How are you able, Michelle, how are you able to do it? So I think you told me when we were meeting that you just acquired something like, was it 150 new stores that just came through the recent acquisition or something like that, a large number?
Yes.
How do you, you know, so you got 150 new store managers who are not used to doing it the Umpqua way. How do you go in and, you know, help them catch the Umpqua, we care about people first culture in a hurry?
Well, the great thing about the merger with Sterling is they had very similar cultural values.
Well, that's good.
That's excellent. It makes an easier marriage, I think, that way. But so while the classic Umpqua values were probably more well known and branded, if you will, the values are very similar on the Sterling side. So that excellent customer experience, being involved in the community, those are things they've already been doing for years and years. So that's easy for the associates to connect. When we brought them together, we could highlight, here are the common things we have, and then here are some cool things that you know, we've done at Sterling that we would like to adapt, and then here's some things at Umpqua that have worked really well as well. So there was a little bit of sharing as well of some ideas that each other hadn't used before. And we also have a group called the Cultural Enhancement Department. And we have some awesome team members in this group who are helping everybody come together with common language around our culture and what it means and who we are. And all the leadership is using the common language, which I think helps associates hear. So they're going to hear it from their leadership. They're going to see it on the intranet. They're going to hear Ray talk about it in a video. And we're going to experience and live it as well in the same common language. So that's the quicker you can get that common language and those common things brought together, I think the quicker you can bring the cultures together.
Yeah, great, great concept, great ideas and practices. So one of the, as you know, the motto of this show is, you know, our mission is to help the good guys win, because there's too many bad guys out there that are winning, in our opinion. And you guys, you're on the show because you're one of the good guys, and your firm is obviously one of the good guys. And yet we have this, you know, Gallup employee engagement poll that tells us that, you know, 70%+ of American workers in our country are disengaged with their jobs, and it hasn't changed in the last 2 years. The data from the previous survey 2.5 years ago is the same as it was this year. I think it's been 3 years now. And this year we have new data that says that 18% on the confidential poll actually say they hate their jobs, and the most common reason that they hate their jobs is because they hate their bosses. So, Michelle, what connection do you see between this employee engagement, measurement or concept and this culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement that you're working on building at Umpqua?
What a lead-in to our
break.
Last segment.
We can't have a break.
We have to have a break. The time's up. We got to go to it. All right, we're going into a break. We're going to come back. We're going to hear Michelle's answer and our final segment of Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember when your company was awesome? It was you against the world. Successful strategy. To-do list, done. Supersonic growth. But over time, the sharp edge gets dull, and good is good enough. Why? Because companies forget that bigger is not always better. That politics crush people, innovation, and creativity. And before you can say rotten corporate culture, social media posts are infecting your business. The answer? It's not just your corporate strategies, it's your corporate culture. Excellent companies know that bad culture eats great strategy for breakfast. These guys really get it. Whether you're a family biz or a Fortune 500, or a new biz and want to get it right, excellent cultures can bring you back to awesome, because they get it. What they know for sure? You don't need another consultant. Excellent cultures gives you what you need to get what you want. Bottom line business results that last. How do they do it? With successful business leaders as coaches and proven scientific data. They read your company's culture from inside out. Think MRI. They give you fast, accurate bottom line tactics. They don't treat symptoms, they go for the cure. Based on science, they reveal the hearts and minds of your people using proven and concise data, not warm and fuzzy psychobabble. And here's the kicker. You get supervisors who coach and inspire, workers who love their work, and everyone, that's everyone, not just the boss, takes ownership and accountability. It just doesn't get much better than this. And if you're wondering if Excellent Cultures works, just ask a few of their grads. Don't let the culture monster eat your strategy for breakfast. Check it out for some free advice from one of their experts now, or start it yourself with their complimentary online business culture MRI.
We're back on Biz Culture Matters and Clay on Clay 1180 AM at excellentcultures.com. And Steve, you asked Michelle the big one.
The big one.
The big question of all questions, the employee engagement
question. The employee engagement question. So before the break, listeners, we were asking Michelle to give us her trade secrets on the connection between employee engagement and how they do it at Umpqua, and this culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement that, you know, they've obviously built. Tell us what's going on, Michelle.
Well, I think we've talked about a few of those things already. One, I don't think our engagement is higher than what the statistics are showing. But again, here's where I come back to it, is we've got to make sure that the people feel like they're making an impact. Our associates need to have a connection between what we're trying to create, what our vision is, so they need to understand it and hear it. We need to be genuine about it and transparent, too, with them and honest. And we've got to be, we have to have the courage to admit when we make a mistake and fix it. But their feedback is critical. Having them involved in solving the problems, sharing ideas, how to make things better is it's absolutely critical to keep associates engaged, because social media, all these distractions we have today, it's easy to just, you know, get distracted and move on to something else. One of the really neat things we've just put into play, I'm really excited about, is this this virtual idea engine that we've placed on our intranet, and we're getting all associates involved. So we're posing a question out there of a challenge we're having at the bank that we want to solve for. And we are gathering the input right now. It's all on a blog where we can see each other's responses, and we're gathering each other's input on this topic, on how to solve for it and how people feel about it. So they can go on any time during the day. They can add to other people's ideas and thoughts. They post their own. They can post articles or links to articles of, you know, research and ways that we might want to consider solving this. And we are going to move this virtual idea engine is going to help us solve some of our challenges that we have at the bank. And one of them we're talking about right now is, you know, bringing these cultures together and making sure that our customer experience continues to be the best it can be. So it's a bottom-up view, if you will. It's gathering from everybody in the organization their views on how we can improve things. Those type of opportunities keep people engaged. I have a say. I'm going to see what's going to happen. I'm going to be, it'll be totally transparent on how the ideas get fleshed out, evaluated, and what's going to happen with them.
Yeah, great to hear you say that. Kind of, so kind of like a high-tech employee suggestion box that is giving people the freedom to share their ideas and kind of synergize off of each other when they see everybody else's ideas all on your internal communication on your intranet. What a great idea.
Exactly.
Yeah. So let me underscore, just listeners for a second here, some of the points that Michelle has made so very, very well, so that you don't do what so many leaders do. They hear the bright idea, oh, great, let's go do this intranet employee suggestion box blog thing. But those don't work when you don't do the little things that Michelle just told you about, that you take immediate action on feedback that you get so that people know that, hey, this isn't just a big survey thing. Leadership really cares. That you know, maybe you could start with making sure that you really care to start with. And because people and leaders who don't care, you know, they can, you can give them all the feedback that you want, and it doesn't make a lot of difference. So, you know, as you listen to a leader like Michelle talk about these things, make sure you catch the key critical culture components, because that's what's really making the difference. So, Michelle, put your coach's hat on for a second and think about you know, what tips you can give, you know, to leaders who are listening to the show. Maybe some of them, I was really, you know, enjoyed reading what you wrote for us on your first, you know, aha moment as a leader who discovered that you weren't doing so well and the feedback that you got from your employees. Obviously, you are where you are today because you have a lot of battle scars, and you've recovered from those, and you've learned some great things. But put your coach's hat on for a second and, you know, give some tips to, you know, maybe some emerging leaders of lessons that they can learn the easy way without having to do the school of hard knocks like you did.
Mm-hmm. I'd say be true to your word. If you're going to say you're going to do something, do it. If you're going to say, I'm here to support you, you better be there to support them. That means if they email you, you need to be responsive in a reasonable amount of time. If they need help with something, you need to be responsive. You know, ensure that the vision of what you're trying to create, you're communicating it so teams not just understand it, but they have a reason to share in it and they want to be a part of it. make sure you admit when you do something wrong. To the point you made, when I was very early in my management career, I thought just telling people what to do would work, and it doesn't. And I quickly learned, because they had the courage to go to my boss and say, hey, this isn't working. And
do I really have to work for this bossy lady?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how it was. And I was young. Again, remember, I started in banking when I was 5, so pretty young. But, when you realize that people want to be a part of the solution, they want to be a part of creating something or fixing something, creating something, they will step up if they understand what that vision is and you're sharing with them how they can be involved or getting them involved. You know, just create a meaningful place at work. We're here a lot of hours. This is our family. My family is here at work, and then I have my family at home. So, people like to work with people they like. And part of that is just being honest, being true to your word, and doing what you say you're going to do.
Yeah, I heard another golden nugget there. You know, I love these interviews because you always hear when a leader is speaking comfortably what's really in their heart, and it comes out. And it's so valuable. What I heard you just say is that people really want to be a part of not just complaining, or rather said, they want to be a part of solving the problem, not just talking about it. When they're just talking about it, it's complaining. And it really gets bad when they're talking about it and complaining about it and nobody ever listens. But just the way that the philosophy behind this employee, high-tech employee suggestion inbox intranet that you've talked about is huge, because it sounds like you've figured out a way to operationalize your culture with technology and make your people a part of not just talking about problems, but solving them.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, probably the old Michelle before you heard that the feedback about what your employees were telling your boss years ago when you were young, may not have realized that, gosh, people want to be a part of solving problems. When you have leaders who believe that, well, it's our job to solve the problems and tell you what to do, or if they really believe that and they try to fake it just to get employee engagement, it just doesn't work.
It doesn't. And I'll tell you, it makes your job as a leader a lot easier, too. Isn't it? It's so much. I mean, they have great ideas. They usually have better ideas than I do. So, bringing them together and having a brainstorm, or having them say, hey, we have this challenge. How are we going to solve it? What do you think we can do? I mean, we get silly, we high five, whatever, but I mean, it's exciting when we pull together and we can solve something. And that happens here more often than not.
Yeah, I just heard another golden nugget there, listeners, that I want to emphasize and underscore. Whenever firms engage excellent cultures to help them improve their cultures and get better, we use scientific instruments and tools to draw out these core beliefs that are behind what's going on. And we just heard one from Michelle. You know, she really believes that her people have better ideas than she does. And if you're a leader who doesn't believe that, you're going to struggle. Right, Michelle?
Absolutely.
You can fake it all you want. You can do all the engagement surveys you want. You can hire all the expensive consultants that you want. But if you believe that you're smarter than your people, and that they're dumb and you're smart, or that you've got all the bright ideas and they don't, you will struggle.
You will go down, and if not on your own, they will take you down.
They will take
you
down.
And they know that, right? They can read that. They can sense it. They can read it. So sometimes they know it before you even act that way, just by what you're saying. So, yeah, it's so important. The best ideas come from the teams.
Yeah, what a huge positive core belief for leaders to, assimilate and make a part of their belief system, and if you hire people that you don't believe are smarter than you, then you're probably hiring the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Awesome. We're out of time. Where did it go?
It's always fun when you have someone that giggles between their answers like Michelle does.
That was awesome.
No, we love it. We love it. We know that we did our job to ask the questions to get the real Michelle.
The Umpqua party came to the radio.
Yeah, it did.
That's all so awesome.
Well, next time you peek in a store, I hope there is a party going on.
Yes.
If not, we're going to tell you.
All right. In the meantime.
I'm gonna come help you switch banks.
Perfect. I like it. All right, guys, we gotta go. We're out of time. You've been listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We want to hear from you. Send us an email. Ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. See you next week.